N10, brought to you by Muswell Hill Media.
Hello and welcome back to the N10 show. On the show today, we're off to Monte Carlo on a sponsored bike ride.
My probably signature bit is I haven't cycled since I was 13. I bought the bike in September. I had one lesson on which I discovered that I can't actually turn around in a circle.
We try and tempt you into reading one of the most difficult texts in English literature, Ulysses.
Ulysses is the book, the great book that nobody reads. Because it's hard. It's difficult to get into. The narrative form is constantly shifting. The allusions are huge. I mean, he comments on and alludes to almost all of the English literature that has come before him.
And we end the show with some music from the 9-piece swing band Down for the Count.
What started off as just a bit of fun has kind of grown into quite a successful enterprise for all of us.
You're listening to the N10 show with me, LJ. So we start this week with a sponsored bike ride.
We're starting at London's O2 on Sunday the 29th of April, and we are cycling to Monte Carlo, the casino in Monte Carlo, over 12 days of cycling. So we've got 13 days over the top, and I think we do 7 days, one day off, and a further 6 or 5 days, however that works. A team of 9 of us, an eclectic bunch, mostly men, 3 girls. Nigel's mother died about 15 years ago of breast cancer. He tries to do something at least once every 2 years. For me, it's just a huge challenge, and I quite like that. My probably signature bit is I haven't cycled since I was 13, and I hated cycling as a kid. My parents tried to push me onto a bike, and I was like, So when this came up last year, I was, I don't really want to do this. Maybe I should. I bought the bike in September. I had one lesson on which I discovered that I can't actually turn around in a circle. And then come January this year, that's when training really kicked in. And so I've been on average cycling somewhere between 100 and 200 miles a week. So the first day is the hardest day by not simply the style of the cycling is just going to be stop-start because it's out of London. And we're cycling down to Dover, hop on the ferry, get across to France, Calais, and then it's a 20, I think we've got a further 20 miles in France, might be less than that, to the first hotel that we stay in. So that's day one, which seems like an awful sort of long slog. And then after that, it's about 60, 65 miles a day, so on average about 7 hours. Our target is 10,000. Breast Cancer Care and Breast Cancer Haven, we've got a split 75-25% split on their charity. So justgiving.com/London to Monte Carlo 1.
That was Lisa Caswell. And if you'd like to support their ride, you can find a link to their Just Giving page on n10show.com. Let's move on now to James Joyce and Ulysses, one of the most difficult books I have ever read, but also because of that, one of the most rewarding. It's a challenging read, and I would definitely recommend, if you are interested, that you find a group like the London Literary Salon, which is based in Kentish Town, to help you through the text. This particular group runs the Ulysses Salons every year. I did it a couple of years ago and it took us 4 months, so it's quite a commitment. This year's group are at the chapter called Nausicaa, and so I went along to one of their sessions to ask Toby, who runs the sessions, why people should bother reading the book. And I hope I succeed in tempting you.
Ulysses is the book, the great book that nobody reads. Because it's hard. It's difficult to get into. The narrative form is constantly shifting. The allusions are huge. I mean, he comments on and alludes to almost all of the English literature that has come before him. And it isn't a story that's about what happened to this character over this amount of time. It doesn't follow a narrative form as we expect it to. So it causes people great difficulty. It's not a book, as I often say, that should be read alone.
This is an interesting chapter for us, I think. And this chapter challenges readers in different ways. I think that it's a bit tricky to to see what Joyce is doing with Gertie's narrative voice, that at times is playful, and at times maybe we might see as it is making fun.
Each chapter connects to an episode in Homer's Odyssey. Sometimes it connects fairly directly, sometimes it's much more a looser connection. In Homer's Odyssey, Nausicaa is the young woman who is playing with a ball with her young girlfriends while she's doing the castle laundry, and happens to discover Odysseus naked, sea-crusted, exhausted, lying under a bush trying to hide himself, but he needs help. So this chapter looks at the experience of a young woman, Gertie, and her meeting sort of the hero of the book, Leopold Bloom.
She felt the warm flush, a danger signal always with Gertie McDowell, surging and flaming into her cheeks. Till then, they had only exchanged glances of the most casual, but now, under the brim of her new hat, she ventured a look at him, and the face that met her gaze there in the twilight, wan and strangely drawn, seemed to her the saddest she had ever seen.
It's told in the voice of a young woman's kind of magazine periodical. What did James Joyce call it? The mushy, marshy, marmalady, drawersy narrative. So it's kind of syrupy sentimental, but not necessarily in a way to deprecate Gertie's voice, but to use the forms that were available to her in her character to help understand her.
She was trembling in every limb from being bent so far back that he had a full view, high up above her knee, where no one ever, not even on the swing. And she wasn't ashamed, and he wasn't either, to look in that immodest way like that, because he couldn't resist the sight of the wondrous revealment, half offered like those skirt dancers behaving so immodest before gentlemen looking. And he kept on looking, looking.
Bloom masturbates, and he masturbates to a young woman on a beach that he doesn't speak to. And they don't have any verbal exchange, but they have a form of language between them, is what the narrative says.
Then all melted away dewily in the grey air. All was silent. She glanced at him as she bent forward quickly, a pathetic little glance of piteous protest, of shy reproach, under which he coloured like a girl. He was leaning back against the rock behind. Leopold Bloom, for it is he, stands silent, with bowed head before those young, guileless eyes.
What does this do to our idea of Bloom? I mean, he's being positioned as a hero. In the previous chapter, he fought off an incredibly xenophobic character who threw a biscuit tin at him. So how can this become part of our image of this heroic man?
And then I think because of the way the chapter is structured, and there's this kind of break, and then you realize that she has this disability, then the whole thing is kind of, thrown into relief almost. And I felt all the more poignant for her, because you realize, her dreams and hopes are all within this context, and her little vanities are within this context that she's disabled. And that's why she was kind of a little bit apart from the other girls. And she has such a different perspective to the other girls. And then, the way Bloom sees her and how that all transpires. And for me, one of the loveliest, his free association about, women and the relationship between the sexes, and the women's little vanities and competitivenesses, and all the insights that he has, and this sort of connection that he has with Gertie, which on the face of it is a little bit maybe weird and gross. I mean, when you think about the central act that, takes place, but is also really, moving, and they do have this bond, and they meet a need within each other.
Reading it and reading it in a group gets people talking about things that we find really hard to talk about. About sexuality, about fear, about shame, about xenophobia, about our relationship to history, about our fears, how we call upon our ancestry and how sometimes we have to reject that ancestry, about faith. Ulysses gets us talking about all of those, and Joyce is very careful, I believe, to offer a variety of perspectives. But he is, ultimately he is a pacifist. That's one of his strong pushes.
I can't but have a personal response to this chapter, because I think hated her response. I, because I had all these struggles. I'm a woman pre-women's lib. Mm-hmm. Do you know, so I remember as a teenager rejecting all this crap.
Yeah.
So to see how she's embracing it and swallowing it, and I admire Joyce's stamina in having to read all the Mills and Boone type sentimental pamphlets and magazines. He must have to absorb that language where he did not repeat himself. In that respect, brilliant. I mean, really brilliant. But the way she doesn't allow her cattiness to come out, although it does slip out in her real reaction to how annoying she finds the children and the childcare responsibilities and the healthy way the other girls are dealing with the children. All that's great fun. But yeah, I was so angry with her, and that reminded me when I was a teenager of my really sensible, powerful, beautiful friend saying, "Yes, I'll wash your trousers for you," to a perfectly capable young man. And I'm saying, how can you do that? And I can't forget that. It's really riling me now.
That was Toby Brothers, who leads the sessions. And if you are interested in joining one of their salons, they don't just do Ulysses, of course. You can find a link to their website on n10show.com. And finally, some music from swing band Down for the Count. You might remember Mike Paul Smith, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about being a medical student. Well, here he is with his other hat on talking about his band.
We are called Down for the Count. We're a 9-piece swing and soul band. We formed in 2005, a group of friends at school. We first played together in a village pantomime, had a lot of fun, made a lot of noise, and thought that it would be quite fun just to play together as a band.
Very superstitious, writings on the wall.
We never really put it together intending to keep it going for a long time or to do anything particular with it. It just ended up that we've asked to play at friends' weddings and parties in the local area. Over the last 5 years, we've started playing at weddings most weekends in the year, corporate events throughout the week, and so we're very busy. We're represented by some of the largest booking agencies in the country, such as the Live Network.
Very superstitious.
Started off as just a bit of fun, has kind of grown into quite a successful enterprise for all of us.
That was Mike Paul Smith, and you can hear his band Down for the Count at the Crouch End Arts Festival. They're playing on Friday the 4th of May at 8 p.m. at the Crouch End Music Palace. So if you'd like to hear them play live, go along. There's a link to their website and also to the Crouch End Arts Festival website on n10show.com. And that's all we have for this week. My thanks to Lisa, and good luck to Lisa, Toby and Mike. We are back as usual next week, so if you'd like to take part or have any comments, you can log on to n10show.com or you can follow us on Twitter at MuswellHM. Till next week, goodbye.
N10, brought to you by Muswell Hill Media.